Now, normally we have a chat with Dr. Ross Walker. He's on a junket. He's in Paris this afternoon, he is. Absolutely in gay Paris. So, Dr. Brad Mackay is going to fill in for Dr. Ross for the next couple of weeks. Hello, Dr. Brad. How are you?
Not too bad. I will hold the fort while Ross is away.
I'm sure you will do a wonderful, wonderful job. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate it because we always enjoy our chat with Dr. Ross. We do.
Well, hopefully I can fill his shoes. That'll be fine.
First up, we're talking today about the Berlin Wall pills. Now, I read this story and thought it was April Fool's Day, but it appears as though it is not an April Fool's Day joke. They are Berlin Wall pills, and it says it's a cure for emotional trauma. But it's endorsed by the...
This is really, really wacky, but this is what some people believe. And the strangest thing about this story is it's actually coming from the royal family as well. There's a very strange historical relic that goes with the Prince of Wales, Prince Charles, mm-hmm. That he is a firm believer in homeopathy.
Right.
This Berlin Wall homeopathy cure that comes with his blessing and his stamp of approval. So the whole deal is that they're getting pieces of ground up pieces of the Berlin Wall, diluting it down so there's no molecules even left of the Berlin Wall, mixing it with lactose and water, and then selling it for a beautifully high price. And the website for Ainsworth, which is the company that sells it, is a little bit sort of cagey about what they suggest that it can cure. So it's sort of like off the record, they're saying that it could be helpful for people who have experienced emotional trauma, and that it could supposedly be good for cases of traumatic incidences from the past that have been walled off. This is just very, very strange, vague terms, and breaking down emotional barriers. So I don't know about you, but I don't think that concrete really cares about the emotions that we're feeling. And even if we're diluting it down to practically nothing with homeopathic treatment, it's really unlikely to be producing any therapeutic benefit.
Are there any reviews on websites? Because these days there can be reviews for anything. Are there any reviews on websites to say that they actually do work?
Well, the whole sort of principle about homeopathy is scientifically implausible. So it relies on having like the essence of a chemical or the essence of some being being transmitted in a way that we don't understand fully in science because it doesn't exist. It was invented back in 1790s, so we've sort of moved on a little bit over the past few centuries. And we know that even if this was a scientifically plausible situation, we've even done studies looking at homeopathic treatment and find that it's just the same as taking placebo. So it may benefit some people, but it's only because of the power of your own human mind, not from the power of the essence or the vital force that's contained within the Berlin Wall.
So I won't be rushing to the online site for Ainsworth's and buying my Berlin Wall tablets.
No, not from Prince Charles, no.
There you go. Never trust Charlie. Let's talk about what came out last week. There was a story last week about, it used to be the food pyramid. There's new diet guidelines for meat and for full-fat dairy. They have changed somewhat from what they used to be. Full-fat dairy can safely return now to your shopping list, but you might want to think about cutting back on red meat. That's according to the Heart Foundation, which earlier last week updated its guidelines of what to eat. Eat to reduce your risk of heart disease and stroke.
Yeah, so we're still recommending the basics. So 5 serves of vegetables and have different colours with your vegetables each day. Have about 2 serves of fruit every day as well. But then when we're coming to meat, this is when we're sort of finding a bit of a difference. So they're making a bit of a distinction between processed and unprocessed meat and sort of recommending that we're not having highly processed sausages or other highly processed meats and having a total of about 350 grams of unprocessed beef, pork, lamb or veal each week. So some people can get like half a kilogram on their plate, and so that would be about 2 weeks' worth of your meat intake according to the new guidelines. And this is because we're finding that there are some saturated fats that are associated with meats, and that if we're having too many saturated fats, then that increases our risk of getting heart disease or stroke. The other limit is on processed meats or deli meats, so your typical salamis or prosciutto. We know now that through the whole sort of smoking process and by getting all of the flavors to taste so beautiful in deli meats, those chemicals are also carcinogenic. So the more processed meats that you're having, the more deli meats, the higher likelihood you are of developing colon cancer or other cancers down the line of your life. So we're trying to encourage people to limit that.
Dr. Brad, what about the change in eggs? Now, I remember I grew up in a house where my mum wouldn't allow my dad to have too many eggs because she said it will give you high cholesterol.
Yeah, it's so weird. This is bandied around all the time. So I remember being told, eggs are really great. They're full of lots of protein, so have as many eggs as you like. Then being told, there's too much cholesterol in it, so don't have them at all. And now we're sort of like coming to this sort of middle ground where we're saying that about 7 eggs a week is okay. That you're going to get a fair bit of nutrition from having the whole egg. There's zinc, there's lycopene, there's a whole lot of other good things for you within the egg. It's a good source of nutrition. But if you've got diabetes or cardiovascular disease, don't have more than 7 a week. So that's sort of like the limit. You can have a little bit more than that if you so desire, if you're otherwise healthy and well.
What about milk and cheese and things like that?
Yeah, so there sort of like previously was a move towards like light milk rather than full fat milk. And I think a lot of dietitians these days just describe like skim milk as being watered down milk. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get the full nutritional benefit from it. Some people are saying that you're more likely to feel full if you're having the fats that are in full fat milk. And so you'd be less likely to have other foods that may not be as healthy for you. So full fat milk is okay. We're trying to discourage the skim milk. And certainly discouraging flavoured milk that comes with a whole lot of extra sugar there as well.
So you're trying to discourage the light milks, is that right?
Yeah, so most dietitians these days say, just go for the full fat milk because you'll get better nutrition from that.
Okay, can you have too much full fat milk?
According to the guidelines that I've read, I haven't seen that they've been having a major cutoff. But you wouldn't be wanting to drink 2 litres a day. I think that would be a bit too much.
Right. Because I just think I had light milk on my Weet-Bix this morning. Quick question, digressing, speaking of food, and my wife bought these Weet-Bix that are supposed to lower your cholesterol. Do they work?
Yeah, so there's a bit of food hacking that goes on these days. So with Weet-Bix, there are some types that are shown to decrease cholesterol. I think across the board, if you're having breakfast cereals, if you're having whole grains, particularly porridge as well, unless you're celiac, that's another issue. But all of those sort of like grains and whole grains will absorb a lot of cholesterol that's sitting in your gut. And so instead of absorbing that into your bloodstream, it ends up going out your back end, and so it can be helpful in decreasing cholesterol. And you've probably seen some of the special margarines that are out these days as well, which are designed to have polyunsaturated fats in them, which can be quite healthy and full of healthy fats, compared to having lots of saturated fats, which is in butter, or trans fats, which is in a whole lot of the cheaper margarine that was very popular in the 70s, and we now know that it's terrible for cardiovascular disease, and so you really need to be staying well away from trans fats.
These new recommendations also say you should eat more plant-based foods.
I think saving the planet, that's one thing. If you're having more of a plant-based diet, even if you're sort of replacing a couple of meat-based meals per week and changing that to plants, it takes a hell of a lot less energy goes into producing plants compared to producing a cow or a pig. So you're saving the planet, but also saving your waistline and saving your coronary arteries.
So the guideline is still, at least 5 serves of vegetables every day?
Yep. So So using lots of different types of vegetables and different colours. I'll often recommend for my patients to go and find a wacky vegetable that they've never had before, and then try to incorporate that into a meal each week. Something new. A couple of pieces of fruit. So that's like one big apple, or maybe a couple of plums. Also grains or cereal foods. The source of nutrition. So about 5 to 6 serves of grains, and trying to get whole grains. Having whole grains decreases your risk of getting bowel cancer as well. And 2 to 3 serves of lean meat. That includes fish, eggs, and tofu, which my partner hates, or legumes or beans is all right as well. And a couple of serves of milk, cheese, or yogurt per day as well.
Okay, we'll wait until they re-look at it in another couple of years and they come up with another way that we should be eating the food.
Yeah, we'll come up with another shape.
We will.
It's currently a pie diagram, so we'll see what
we've gone from what? What did it used to be? It used to be a triangle, so we've gone from a triangle to a pie diagram. We'll be a square next time.
But we can only hope, yes.
This is a story that came out of the States. A US patient who contracted a serious lung disease after vaping has died. Now, this marks the first death in the country linked to the smoking alternative popular with teens and young adults. I suppose it's here. You walk down the street, you see someone's head lost in this vapor of what looks to be smoke, and then you realize, no, it's not, they're vaping. And you think, oh, are they doing the right thing?
Well, this is a really controversial thing. There are many doctors, myself included, who sort of look at cigarette smoke and think, well, that's terrible. We know it's terrible. We know it's going to kill you. It's one of the biggest problems in health in Australia. So the less people are smoking, the better. Some estimates over in the UK suggest that if you're vaping, then that's going to be 95% better for you. It's still not going to be 100% safe, but it's certainly going to be better than smoking cigarettes. So then now we've got this case in Illinois in the States where somebody was vaping. The information is still a little bit sketchy, but it says that they developed a severe lung disease after vaping. And so we're reading between the lines and saying, well, there was something in the chemical that they were vaping, that they were inhaling into their lungs, that then caused a very significant amount of inflammation, and then they ended up dying as a consequence of that. There's also been a number of cases, so nearly 200 cases of people developing severe respiratory illnesses after vaping. But the weird thing is that this has really been recent history. So we've had vaping available for over 20 years around the world, and we haven't seen this number of cases. So we're wondering what people are putting in the water. What are they putting in the vaping solution that's causing this inflammation to occur? There's even been some suggestions that it's not even related to nicotine liquid that some people do get around the world, that it could be associated with people who are vaping cannabis-related products. And so that there could be something else that they're putting in the liquid that's causing this dramatic effect. And so the public health organizations in the States are looking around and trying to figure out what that chemical is and how we can avoid the public from using it.
If someone comes to your practice and says, Doc, I want to quit smoking and I'm thinking of taking up vaping, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, so there's a number of different modalities that we can use. So anything from the typical nicotine patches to nicotine gum, which can just replace the nicotine in your system. We also have some tablets too that can help decrease cravings for nicotine. So we always try to start with those.
Right.
But there are some people who are hardcore smokers, have been smoking for 50 years. They've tried everything else and they haven't been able to give up smoking. And so one of the options that I consider for my patients is vaping. But one of the problems is that it's really hard to get nicotine based solutions in Australia. It's sort of illegal to buy it over the counter, but you can get it with a doctor's prescription. Unfortunately, it's really hard even to get it online, even with a doctor's prescription these days too.
Okay. I've run out of time. I've got to go to the news. That wasn't so hard, was it?
No worries. All good.
Terrific. Thank you so much, Dr. Brad McKay. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday, all right?
No problems. I'll catch you then.
Thanks, Brad.